Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Well, welcome to another episode of Marketing News Canada. I am so thrilled to introduce you to AJ, who is the co-founder and chief strategy officer of Palette Skills, a national nonprofit focused on meeting the needs of Canada's most innovative companies by upskilling workers from diverse backgrounds to transition into new industries. AJ, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And AJ, you don't just run Palette Skills. You guys have a new initiative from the federal government called Upskill Canada as well.
We do, yes. We launched that in April of this year after a long process of, you know, working with the government and convincing them of the need for this kind of great opportunity. And it's a super exciting initiative. It's a $250 million fund that we're now leading to help bring this kind of upskilling program across the country to all Canadians and multiple sectors and working with incredible partners to do it.
It's amazing. So many of our listeners and viewers are working in advertising, marketing, kind of the innovation sectors, small to medium businesses. And so the idea of upskilling, tell me what that means and what that means for these business owners and those that are working kind of in this kind of a innovative industry.
Yeah, absolutely. So upskilling is sort of one of these words that cropped onto the scene a couple of years ago. And people were like, is this just a rebranded way to talk about training, right? What is upskilling really all about? And that's something that we've really thought about and worked on as we've been delivering these programs of what is it that's different about this than any other sort of training or educational approach. And there's a couple things that are pretty unique about upskilling, and particularly the way that we define upskilling at Palette Skills. The first is that upskilling is, for us, it's inherently demand driven. So if you think about most of the kinds of training programs or employment programs that exist out there, they start with the person that's trying to get a job. And they say, you know, you've lost your job or you're looking to change careers. What do you want to do? And how can we create something for you that will get you there? Whereas upskilling, in our view of it, is inherently demand driven. And so that starts with the employers, with the company, and says, what is the talent that you need or what is the job that you need filled? And how can we go look at our labor market a little bit differently, go look at the workforce a little bit differently to find someone who might be well suited for that job? And then how do we build a program that will help transition that person from where they are, whether that's perhaps somebody in your company in a job that you know will not exist for much longer, or someone in a different company in a different sector that sees their sector changing or their job changing and wants to switch careers and find something more growth oriented. So, you know, upskilling is really about helping industry find the workers that they need, and then ensuring that the workers have access to the programs that they need to take advantage of those opportunities. And the other thing that I'll say that's really important distinction with upskilling is that it's job focused. So how we define success with our programs is whether or not someone got a job in the field that they were upskilled to work in. It's not enough to simply say somebody learned new skills or to say they completed a program and got a certificate as a result of it. Both of those things are often byproducts of upskilling, and that's great. But the success of upskilling, the definition of success, is a job.
It's amazing. And you hear for so long, education institutes have been, you know, they're large, right? They're these large ships that, you know, they produce people with degrees. And but they're not held accountable or subjected to rigorous audits on did all of their grads get jobs. Whereas the flip side with what you're doing, it sounds like that's the focus.
It is, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's important to note that there's all kinds of approaches to learning and training that are important within this ecosystem. And, you know, degree granting and sort of that foundational learning experience that you get when you're an undergrad or in college or in another kind of program like that, you know, it is learning how to learn is a fundamental ingredient for successful in pivoting what you do as you get older. And so, you know, I think that the challenge isn't that institutions perhaps haven't been held accountable for whether their degrees have gotten people into jobs and how long they've held those jobs and how sustainable those jobs are, so much as that there is, we have built this ecosystem of training and support for a labor market that has changed so much in how people move through their careers. And we've been missing this piece that Upskill Canada is now here to deliver and to build across the country as a new form of social infrastructure to help people navigate this whole new work environment. We've been very comfortable saying for the last 20 years that you're going to have 10 jobs in your life. But we haven't built anything to enable that effectively for people in the way that it is that we're doing now. So I think that, you know, we definitely see that people who come into our programs with some sort of foundational credential, it doesn't really matter in what, that they've had some sort of formal learning experience, makes it much easier for them to quickly pick up on new concepts and adapt that learning to get that new job.
It's amazing. And origin story of Palette, we got to talk about this. So sure. Most of the folks listening are in the B2B market, so business to business. They sell their services and other businesses. And one of the hardest parts of this job is A, doing the sales, and B, hiring a salesperson. So tell us about Palette Skills and the role you played in the B2B sales world.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe I'll take you back 2017, a simpler time, a different time. Yes. and you know, I my background myself is in public policy and a lot of those policies that I've worked on over the years in government and other places dealt with workforce development. And I had seen and heard very clearly this sense of this skills gap and this job gap, this talent gap that we were hearing from employers, you know, chronically for decades, that, you know, as much as we had addressed, particularly for fast growing startup companies, you know, we had moved the needle on access to capital, we had moved the needle on access to markets, and yet this idea of access to talent was just continuously a thorn in our side that we seemed to struggle to move the needle on. At the same time, I was well aware that, you know, according to the OECD, when you look at our statistics, we are one of the most highly skilled, highly educated workforces in the world.
Yeah.
Canada has an incredible population of people who are phenomenally talented and skilled in all kinds of things. And so we really kind of sat with this challenge of saying, you know, how can we have the most highly skilled workforce in the world and yet still lack skilled workers? It doesn't make any sense. And so we started to really dig into that challenge. And we started by looking at it from the perspective of, if we were to solve this problem, how would that express itself? What's the thing that tells us that we've solved this problem when we have workers without jobs and jobs without workers? And that's where we came up with the metric of job placement as that golden indicator, because that told us that we were satisfying both sides of the market. And so we went out and said, okay, well, who then is in control of that indicator? Who controls whether or not someone gets a job? And the only person in this dynamic that controls whether or not someone gets a job is the employer. So we said, yes, that's where we have to start. We have to start with the employers, and we have to understand when they say, I can't find talent, like, what does that really mean? Knowing the landscape that we're operating in and the workforce that we have access to. And so that's where we started, was with employers back in 2017. In 2018, I did a series of roundtables with over 50 companies in this sort of startup tech space to understand this question. And one of the things that we dug into as we heard about it, because it seemed really interesting, was this challenge around finding sales workers and finding sales talent in particular in tech. And it was something that was somewhat ignored up to this point, because when people were thinking about talent and tech, they thought STEM, right? And so we had this sort of investment structure and this training system that was really pumping out a lot of, you know, boot camp grads in web development or in, you know, data science or these different things. And that's all great. That's well needed. But there was a real gap in sales. And you know, we asked these companies. And at the time, you know, Sears and a bunch of big retailers had just laid off a whole whack of their staff, right? Yeah. And so this was where I was like, okay, this is getting interesting. Would you guys in your, you know, e-commerce company that you're building, you're saying you're looking for sales workers, you're saying what really matters to you is that they know how to communicate and they can hear no a whole bunch of times and not give up. And that's what you're hiring for. Have you considered going out and hiring some of these folks coming out of sales, coming out of some really tough work environments when it comes to being, you know, retail sales is not a great job all the time, right? And that these people are doing it. It wouldn't take a lot to teach them how to sell your company instead of selling these shoes, right? And what we heard again and again was like this real resistance to thinking that these kinds of people could do that job. And when we dug under that resistance, it seemed to be a mix of sort of assumptions and bias about what it takes to work in tech or to work in these roles. And a real kind of fear of the unknown. Like, you know, I'm a small company. I'm moving at a million miles a minute. I have huge expectations put on me by my investors. I can't carry the risk of this person not panning out. I need someone who is going to hit the ground running on day one to do the job, because I cannot risk not having someone do that, or even worse, have someone come in who is not only not great at the job, but is a bad hire or a disruptive hire. And so we realized, you know, that was the real challenge we were trying to solve. Wasn't about skills, it wasn't about training, it wasn't about workers, it was about confidence and risk. And really what we were creating was not so much a training program, but like a risk management quality assurance program to get employers feeling confident that these people who could absolutely do the job, but perhaps didn't fit the typical profile that they saw as a low risk hire for the job, that we would give the companies the confidence to make those hires. And so we started testing that model. Our first pilot was looking at the gap in sales and B2B sales in particular in the tech sector. And we built Sales Camp, our first flagship program that is a 1 week intensive with 5 weeks of part-time training to take people from retail, hospitality, and other customer-facing roles where they may have, you know, never sold software before, never worked in a tech environment before, but have developed communication, persuasion, and, you know, objection handling skills. And we take them through this really intense one-week program to teach them how to apply those skills in the tech environment and help them understand the environment that they'll be walking into so that they can hit the ground running for those employers on day one, like the employer needs to see, and still use all of these great skills that they had already developed in a growth-oriented career path, as opposed to trying to find another retailer who, you know, may or may not last in the environment that we're in.
It's incredible. And now, and this is what I think is so exciting, and I don't know if is there an openness now, if someone has like, man, I run an industry right now, I'm involved in this industry, maybe clean tech, or I'm involved in manufacturing, and we have this massive job need or need, can they come to you guys now and say, hey, I've got this need and this is how with the training. Tell me about that process and what does that look like?
Yeah, so that's, I mean, that's the exciting thing about this new initiative that we have with Upskill Canada is that we've, so as we launched Sales Camp, you know, we saw it really start to take off and we saw that the hypothesis that we had proven correct, that, you know, we were able to achieve an above 90% job placement rate for the people who were coming through the program with the employers that we worked with. And we realized that so much of that success was connected to how closely we worked with our customers in who are the employers, in developing the product itself, in developing the program and having them in the classroom, teaching the program, in, you know, having them involved in every step of the way really was a key to generating the confidence that they needed to do that hiring. Mm-hmm. And so what we realized was that we had not only found a way to drive value for our employers as well as our participants in getting jobs and filling jobs, but we were actually innovating a new design model for how to put these kinds of programs together that could be captured and scaled. And so over the next couple of years, we kept running Sales Camp and learning more and more about what it takes to do it effectively, what it takes to screw it up, as we've done, yeah, you know, a handful of times. And but really, you know, learning about ourselves and learning about our stakeholders and how to replicate success over and over and over again. And once we got really good at doing that with Sales Camp, we started to expand into other programs to see if we could replicate that success outside of tech and outside of a sales role. And so we built a cybersecurity program that was training really advanced cybersecurity talent into sort of more sophisticated cyber roles using the same design model that we had built Sales Camp off of. That got similar results to the program and we saw tremendous hiring outcomes from that. We then launched another program called Digital Agriculture, really focused entirely different market. It's based in the prairies. It's working in the agriculture sector and it's really trying to help that sector that is going through a tremendous transformation in bringing on new technology and new automating tools into their practices and is helping them find the talent that they need to use that technology and adopt it into their businesses. And we've seen phenomenal results from that as well and similar uptake. And so from all of those things, we said, you know, okay, this has been repeated, it's proven, it's validated. There's real IP here. And so we capture that into something we call Pallet's model of upskilling, which is six core principles of design that need to go into any one of these programs. Through this funding now that the Government of Canada and ISED has provided to us, what it's really allowing us to do is take the model that we have for upskilling and decentralize it across the ecosystem to all the other incredible organizations out there that have the ability to build and deliver training programs and upskilling programs, to give them both the framework to design them in a way that is going to replicate the success we've felt so far, as well as the funding and resources to be able to build and launch the program. And so that's what we're doing now. We're in this really neat moment of kind of hockey stick growth, which isn't something that you feel as a nonprofit very often. It's not, there are very few, if any of us out there right now that have sort of started with a pilot and ran a pretty standard innovation development play in going from sort of starting with something and then hitting that growth curve and you know, 10xing it. But we're in the process of doing that now. And it's a really, really exciting moment for us to be able to see that, you know, all of the work that we put in over the last 5 years of really getting deep into solving the root causes of this problem are now going to be scaled across the country. And this is the opportunity for all of those partners out there who have the ability to run these kinds of programs to work with those companies, to work with those industry sectors and leaders who are saying, you know what, we need workers over here, we need workers over there. We're now going to have a system that can actually respond to that in real time and stand up programs effectively to address it.
It's incredible. And no partners announced yet, right? It's not.
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. Okay. And I know we got to be careful because you can't like prematurely announce who you're, but maybe generally speaking, in the applications that you've seen come in so far, I mean, I know you don't read every single, you know, dot and T, but like, what are you most excited about coming in? Like, what are you hoping to see? What have you heard of so far that you're like, man, this gives me so much hope for upskilling this next generation or this next season of the economy of Canada?
Yeah. So, man, there's a lot that gives me a ton of hope. I mean, I'm an eternal optimist. You don't get into this work if you're not just like delusionally optimistic all the time, but it usually pans out. I mean, one thing that we were really clear on early on from day one, actually, was that we wanted to be training partner agnostic, that this wasn't about, you know, working within the college system or the university system or intentionally working outside of either of those systems, that this was really about solving problems for employers and solving problems from workers and working with whatever organizations were most willing to get involved and roll up their sleeves and do the work. And I think that what's been really exciting is to see such a diversity of organizations stepping forward as what I would call our early adopters to say, yeah, this model is different perhaps than what we've done in the past. It's you know, this approach might not be something that we're familiar with, but we know that we need to change, or we know we need to try new things, and we're excited to try and we're excited to get involved. And, you know, we're all in on giving it a shot. And I think that that's been really exciting. You know, there's, again, like I said, it's very diverse, the kinds of organizations that are coming forward and interested in playing in this game. And, you know, I think one of the things I'm really proud about for us was that, you know, when we put forward our proposal to the government and started to build this framework, you know, we really stayed true to what we believe needed to be built in order to solve the problem. And, you know, when you get into these processes, you start to, you know, game theory kicks in and you start to think, well, you know, would the funder like to see this, or would the funder like to see that? Or, you know, I need to give on this piece to get this partner on board, or that piece to do, you know, like, you just start to get into kind of horse trading and guessing. And it can be really easy to begin to, you know, water down your approach or just sort of change it. And I think that, you know, for us, we just thought we've worked so hard to get to this moment, and we've learned so much about what it takes to be successful. And, you know, there's lots that we're flexible on.
Yeah.
But there's some things we really don't want to be flexible on. Yeah. And we know that if we're flexible now, we're going to set ourselves up for a really challenging situation if we do, in fact, get this funding. And so we, you know, we stayed firm on our model. We stayed firm on the requirements for it. We stayed firm on a whole bunch of things, on building a system as opposed to sort of pre-allocating partnerships and things like that. And so I'm really proud that we stayed true to that, despite the fear that, you know, what if compromising is the thing necessary to get us across the line for the funds? Instead, we just stayed true to what we wanted to build. And now, so we have the opportunity because of that to really build something meaningful. And I think we have, and we're starting to see it work. And so again, seeing people respond to that with such eagerness and excitement has been really rewarding. And I think, you know, we want to be the friendly disruptor in this space. You know, we want to be pushing people to stretch outside of their comfort zones, but also walking beside them and supporting them as they do that. And I think people see us as that now, which is really exciting to me.
That is so inspiring. I hope everyone hears, like, just that one section, like, generally speaking, for whatever you're doing in life, whether it's an idea or a new venture, or in our industry, pitching an idea to a client or having a great creative concept, like, what you've just shared is so valuable. It's so inspiring. Yeah. Thank you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up.
CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
AJ, a quick call out, if you want to speak to those that are maybe in the industry right now, where can they go and what should they be thinking about when it's like Upskill Canada? What can they be like noodling around with right now? And what's your call out to them? What's your challenge maybe to Canadians right now?
To apply.
Should they apply? Yeah, when it comes to like applying and maybe pitching Upskill Canada, what's your pitch to those that should pitch you? Maybe that's the third.
Sure. So, I mean, so to our, I, right now we're getting pitched by delivery partners, right? That's the sort of audience that, we're engaging with right now. And I think, I think that it's one of the great things about us being in this position is that we have been in your position for the last 5 years, right? There is no one that understands how hard it is to stand a program like this up better than we do, because we've been doing it. And so we've, I think, really built a model that, again, you know, takes everything we've learned and really tries to come at it in an empathetic way with our partners to say, you know, this is hard and we know we're asking you to do hard things, but we know that if you come with the commitment to try and to do the work, good things will come. And so long as you try and do the work and keep problem solving throughout the process and show us that approach, we'll walk with you on that, right? We'll work with you on that. That's what we want to see. You don't have all the answers because you've never done this before. So don't come to me telling me you have all the answers, right? Mm-hmm. Tell me what you're going to do to figure it out. Tell me that you understand how to work with a customer base, like a group of employers, and really listen to them. If you're telling me that you have all the answers, then you're going to go tell them you have all the answers. And they know you don't have all the answers. And so, like, let's not play this game. Let's be honest with each other and just listen and learn and try and adapt. And so I think that that's, you know, whether you're picking the right sector or the right job or the right partners, I mean, you know, you can't know that as a delivery partner, because we're trying to put this jigsaw puzzle together, and part of that is relative to everyone else that's coming forward. But what you can do is show me that you understand the spirit of what we're trying to do, that you understand the stakeholders you're trying to work with, and you understand how to really collaborate with industry in a close and meaningful way, because that is going to be the key to your success and ultimately our success.
Come on, AJ, that's awesome. Dang, you ready for the rapid fire?
Yes.
All right, let's do this. Okay, what was your first ever job, Jay?
My first ever job was delivering penny savers in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I think I was like 8 or 9 years old, and it was a terrible job, terrible.
I think everyone needs a terrible job in their lifetime so that they can appreciate a good job, yeah.
I agree.
Night owl or early bird?
Absolute night owl, 100%, yeah.
Cat or dog person?
Dog person, without question.
Okay. What was the first ever thing that you like kind of sparked, got going? What was the first ever thing that you were like, man, I did that from scratch? Because you seem to be like a fire sparker. You get stuff done.
Oh man, the first thing I sparked from scratch. I have a very vivid memory when I was really young. At the end of I grew up in like very typical 80s suburb, like, you know, surrounded by farm fields, and our subdivision was like the first in the neighborhood. And there was a field up the street from us that was empty that all the street kids used to go play in. And then one day construction crews showed up and started spray painting stuff to build something. And we were all like, so burnt up about it, about this park going, getting taken out. And so I organized all of the kids in the neighborhood to go up to the park one afternoon and pick out all of the spray painted grass that the construction crew had spray painted in order to build their new subdivision. And we cleared the grass of all of the spray paint to try and get that done. That was the first time I remember like trying to organize people to do something.
Awesome.
And yeah, anyway, that was, it still went in. It was, and it turned out to be a school and it had an even better playground. So, I mean, you know, a lot of lessons I should, suppose you could pull from that one.
No, those are very formative pieces. Yeah, no.
It was a formative moment for sure.
Dark or milk chocolate?
Milk chocolate.
Okay. Your favorite word right now?
Integration.
Okay. I like it. What does that mean to you? What's that word mean?
So, I mean, it's a word that I think about all the time at work right now, because we have, you know, we went from signing our contribution agreement to launching our platform in 4 weeks, and then opened up our applications in 8 weeks. And so we've hired like 40 people in the last 4 or 5 months. Like, it's been insane getting this thing off the ground and launched and started. And so, like any other startup, you know, we just went gangbusters on getting the build out the door, get moving, and bringing on all these people, and everybody's just been heads down on their piece of the puzzle to get it all done. And that's been incredible to watch. But in order for us to really continue to succeed in this new size, we need to really get all the pieces back together. And I just did this with my hands, which anyone on my team can tell you, they see me almost every day go like this.
Yes. Which like, those that are listening, you're taking your fingers and crisscrossing
them. Oh yes, thank
them.
You.
Yes,
great.
Yes, that's great. Yeah.
So yes, exactly. Yes, integration between the hands. And I think about it all the time. That's part a big part of my job right now is to get us all realigned, get us all working together, get, you know, the 60% of our staff were net new in the last 3 months to understand how we work. Awesome. So yeah, that's a big word at the top of my mind these days.
Last charity you supported financially or with your time, and why?
I think it was the Sunnybrook Foundation here in Toronto. Yeah. And it was because someone came and knocked on my door and I felt really guilty saying no. And I'm that sucker. Like I hate it, but I'm who keeps those people in business. Yeah. And
you're the reason they were like, no, this stuff works when you ask for donations.
I know,
at the till.
I don't want it to work.
But, okay. That's amazing.
But they do great work, I should say. The Sunnybrook Foundation is an incredible organization.
Of course
they do great work. They all do great work.
Yeah. What is a movie that you love you can watch over and over again?
Oh, man. I don't know. I feel like everything that's at the top of my list is like embarrassing.
That's all right. Yeah.
What can I watch over and over again?
Everyone's got their guilty pleasure. Yeah. So it's always.
I think if I have like, if it's like a rainy day and for some reason I don't have kids running around my house and I can just curl up on the couch, I'm probably watching Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to the trilogy. Yeah.
Extended version or regular version?
Yeah. Like, just go for it. Just, you know,
amazing.
It's like the ultimate, at this point now, I have 2 young kids. And so, you know, putting aside like 4.5 hours for Peter Jackson's, you know, narrative journey is just like the ultimate luxury. Like, it's absolutely frivolous. So that's what I'm doing.
So I'm going to age myself. So I'm 41. So when the movie came out in theaters and then it came out on DVD, you could get the extended box set. And I bought it. And there was these things back then called Easter eggs. On DVDs.
Yeah.
So, okay, if you remember. So if you
push... You need my friend,
Okay.
I was like...
So for those that don't know, that are listening, you could go on the menu and you'd push left and right, but you couldn't go up and down. But if you did go up, you would sometimes find hidden videos you could watch. And it was like the coolest thing to find those Easter eggs.
I know.
People who don't have DVD players will never discover the joys of Easter eggs. Unless Netflix... I'm sure Netflix has Easter eggs. You think they have Easter eggs somewhere? They must. Must have one.
I mean, they're so delightful. Like, they've got to figure it out.
They've got it. They've got it. Okay. I'm going to Google that after this. I'll find this out. Favorite song or album on repeat right now?
Again, I am the classic, like I turned mid 30s and all of my music tastes reverted back to my like early 20s. And that's all I listened to, or late teens. So I'm just trying to think. Probably, I'm going to say Weezer's Blue Album. I just went to see them in concert a couple days ago. And like, they're really timeless. Yeah. And every song on that album...
Sweater, right? Remember
Sweater? Sweater, Sadie and So, Buddy Holly, they're all classics.
If you want to destroy my sweater. Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sorry. if you weren't doing this job in like another multiverse, what would you be doing with your life, you think?
I think I'd either be working in politics or doing some sort of like very on the ground operational like charity work or something like international development work or something like that.
That's awesome. It's a neat mix. Yeah.
Yeah.
App on your phone you can't live without.
Instagram.
Favorite children's book.
I like, there's a lot of good ones there. I gotta say the books I read my kids are way better than the books that I feel like I got read, but I do have to go back to the classic. I feel like Goodnight Moon is still pull that out for my kids and it's just like comfort food.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Best thing you ever bought for under $10.
Best thing I ever bought for $10. I don't know. Is anything that cheap anymore?
I know. Even the dollar store. They're not, things in the dollar store aren't a dollar. Yeah,
it's true. It's true. I don't know. I probably just like whatever snack I need when I'm hungry is the best thing I could ever purchase for under $10. Like satisfy the need, you know? I feel like that's it, yeah.
What's the most important thing you ever changed your mind about?
Whether or not I was an entrepreneur.
Wow.
For a long time, I would have told you I'm not. Yeah. And then I finally accepted, obviously I am.
Awesome.
It took a woman that I didn't really know, but was sort of pitching on my work to kind of set me straight. I spent, you know, she was like, wow, you're an incredible entrepreneur. I'm like, well, I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't do this. I don't do that. I don't do whatever. And she's like, listen, honey, you're sitting in front of me, pitching me your idea, sweating blood to get it off the ground. You're an entrepreneur. Knock it off. Stop kidding yourself.
That's awesome. And I was like,
all right. Yeah, true. Fair.
We need those good truth tellers in our lives.
Totally.
Any books or podcasts that you recommend that you find inspiration from or have?
So, I would say the number one book that I like, anyone who asks me about books, I can't stop talking about too, is a book called Rest is Resistance by a woman named Trisha Hersey. And she, you can find her on Instagram under the NAP Ministry. It's an organization she runs and it's all about, the importance of rest, but it's written not from a sort of self-help or, you know, wellness industry perspective. It's really pretty political and radical, looking at, you know, the role of rest and forced labor historically in, you know, in capitalism and in slavery and, you know, which is origins of a lot of our economic models today. And sort of is this proliferation of a grind culture mentality and what's that's doing to us as people and individually. And I find it really fascinating because I'm very fascinated by all of these topics around the systems that we're living under today and how they're affecting us and how we dismantle them. And I read a lot of stuff about that coming from a top level, you know, talking about it at a systems level. And what I find fascinating about her work is that, you know, she talks about the systems and the systems level, but then she takes it right down to you as an individual and says, like, you don't need to believe any of this. Go lay down and listen to your body, you know, feel how quickly you start to feel jittery and guilty for not doing something, right? Mm. Like, who told you to feel that way? Who taught you that you didn't deserve to rest when you're tired, right? And They're powerful questions to ask. And as someone who is an entrepreneur, as I can admit now, and has really burned herself out many times thinking that I need to, you know, grind all day long to get something done. And, you know, I can't stop, and stopping is, you know, weakness, is really powerful stuff to learn and unlearn. And I feel like I'm in a position to be able to bring some of those lessons into the work we do at Pallet and the way we structure our organization at Pallet. And so anyway, I would really encourage everybody to read that book, Rest is Resistance.
It's amazing. I'm gonna get that book today. Sounds amazing.
Do it up.
Any kind of like newsletters or websites that you kind of subscribe to or get that you're like, man, I love what these guys are putting out?
Honestly, not really. And I feel like
you're going to make it. You're going to make the play. What's it called? Yeah, Sandbox, right? Sandbox?
The Learning Sandbox. I'm a news junkie. So that's really, I go to, you know, I read newspapers. That's my papers, quote unquote. But I'll read sort of four papers or skim them a day. So I read the Star, Toronto Star. I read the Globe and Mail, New York Times, and then usually a couple other group, like I have a handful of others that I flip between. So that's really where I get a lot of my thinking that's what I turn to. Yeah.
That's awesome. Favorite paper, or are you kind of like, you know, you can't say who your favorite child is, but do you kind of go to?
I have there's different authors or different journalists that I like more than others, but I think, you know, all of those papers are good. So
Perfect. Leave it out. Love it.
But one thing I always try to do is read at least one news source that is totally counter to what, you know, like I'm not normally super aligned with some of the policies or positions of the National Post, but I like to read it to better understand where they're coming from and
different perspective. And
I'll go on Fox News sometimes and see what they've got to say about issues. And it's, always a wild alternate universe, but it's good to know, right? Yeah. It's important to know what other people think. Yeah. So
read the Beaverton, get their perspective.
Hey, gotta love that Beaverton. You know, always that's the hard hitting news source that I turn to. Yeah, 100%.
What's your where do you hang out online? Where's your kind of go to social channels? Or like, are do you spend much time producing content online personally?
No, I am not.
You're getting
a very
stuff
online
done.
Person.
You ain't got time for that.
You know, honestly, I kind of like back in 2015, 2016, I wouldn't say I like dealt with like tech addiction, but like I was really getting to a point where I felt like I did not have control over the amount of time that I was spending online or the way that I was using social media and or that I had a lot of control over how using those tools was affecting how I was feeling, my mental health and my stress and all of that stuff. Yeah. And I started to really dig into learning about it and learning about the psychology behind, you know, app creation and the tools of like addiction psychology that are embedded in so many of these tools that we use. And I used a whole bunch of techniques to try to really get my relationship with technology to a healthy place and under control. And one there where I felt that it was benefiting me, but I was not sort of enslaved to it. And so, that was a real process. I gave birth to my daughter in 2016. And so it was like a real kind of, I need to get my head on straight for this next journey. And I didn't feel like I had it on straight. And so, I really try not to use my technology a ton, and it's all 100% easier said than done. But Instagram. I already said that's one of my favorite apps. So that is the one. If there's one tool that or one thing that I use a lot, that would be that one. And then LinkedIn, and that's about it. Yeah. And I don't produce much content for either of those.
Yeah, not yet. Soon.
Not yet.
Maybe another season of your life.
Yeah, honestly, some of it has been hesitancy because the more you produce, the more people engage with you and the more you have to engage with them. And that was where I felt like I was losing control. Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, I got a lot of stuff to say and I want to get out there and say it. So I'm going to have to find a balance of of doing those things.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and producing content on this show. So it's
this is nice. This is one side. So,
no, it's great. You know. It's beautiful. Anything else? So Palette Skills, people can check out B2B Sales Camp. It's amazing. Those that are in our industry especially, highly encourage you to check out the upskilling Absolutely. You can provide for your own staff, especially because everything we do is B2B. And those that are in, for some reason, ag tech, also some training there as well. And if you've got come from industry and your industry, you've got maybe an association or a group, and you're, man, you have a big need, check out Upskill Canada. You might be able to pitch something, or keep an eye out for Upskill Canada as they launch amazing programs that are going to help enhance and upskill your industry today and tomorrow and next year and years to come. It's wonderful. AJ, anything else you want to leave with listeners?
No, I think that was it. I think, I'll give you the website is paletteskills.org or upskillcanada.org. Either one will take you to our main pages. And as you said, like it's we've really, you know, we're really trying to do things differently as a funder and as an organization in this space. And I think that, if you reach out to us, you'll start to see that right away. And so, we're looking for partners. We're super, super active right now looking for partners of all kinds. Stay tuned.
It's amazing. Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was great.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us this week on Marketing News Canada. And we'll see you next time on the show.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded at the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editor, Travis Jeffers.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.